Welcome to the Single Greatest Choice podcast, where single women find support, empowerment, information, and inspiration around the topics of singleness, fertility, motherhood, and mindset. I'm your host, Katie B., and I'm thrilled to be back for a second season to share more stories of women like you and me who are navigating these choices, along with interviews with experts in the fields of fertility preservation, coaching, and psychology. Whether you're just starting to question what to do about your finite fertility, or whether you're ready to make the leap into solo motherhood by choice, I hope these conversations will help you to feel more supported and confident along the way. Because whatever you decide to do with these years could be the single greatest choice you'll ever make, and you don't have to make it alone. This week on the podcast, my guest is Whitney Bischoff Angel, an egg freezing nurse specialist at OVA Egg Freezing in Chicago. Fertility preservation is her career path, but it's also quite personal. Whitney chose to freeze her own eggs back in 2013, and she used her experience on the reality TV series The Bachelor as a platform to bring awareness to issues of women's reproductive health and fertility. In this episode, Whitney will share about her own experience with egg freezing and motherhood, and she'll also provide valuable information for listeners who are just beginning to explore fertility preservation through egg freezing. I'm so happy to have Whitney on the show today, especially for listeners who are concerned about their fertility but not quite ready to make the leap into parenthood. After my interview with Whitney, I will be sharing another mini episode, which is an anonymous clip from a listener of the podcast who does have clarity around her decision to become a solo parent, and she shares with us some insight into her decision-making process. You may remember that I asked early in the season for listeners to send in clips on various topics so that I could put together several topical episodes at the end of the season. In all transparency, as my pregnancy progresses and I'm realizing how little time I have left before my sweet baby arrives, I'm really working to slow down in the coming weeks and months before he's due. I started to question whether I'll even have the stamina to create those intended episodes, but I definitely want to honor the listeners who so generously shared with us, so my plan at this point is to weave these little mini episodes into the podcast where it makes sense so that I make sure to get them out into the world before I wrap up the season. You'll find that little bonus in about the last 10 minutes of the show this week. Thank you so much to Whitney and to this week's mini episode guest for being open and willing to share your stories. It's so important to me to bring you all both information and inspiration, and I hope this episode provides you with a little of both. Hi, Whitney. Welcome to the Single Greatest Choice podcast.
Hello. It feels so good to be here.
Yes, I'm so happy to have you here. You are a little bit of a different kind of guest. Typically, we have women here to tell their personal stories, which I would love to know some details of your personal life, just so we know who we're talking to. But really, you're here in more of a professional capacity to talk with us about fertility and fertility preservation, because you are, what is your official job title?
I am an egg freezing nurse specialist.
Okay, that's what I thought. I didn't want to say it wrong. So I'm sure for this audience, that is a very interesting career path and an area that they want to know a lot about. So we'll just start from the beginning. Just tell us a little bit about you and how you got into the field of fertility.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like the role is still so interesting to me, and I've been doing it now for a really long time. And I still sometimes pinch myself that this is kind of how my career unfolded and where I ended up. So I'm from Kentucky, and I graduated nursing school kind of unsure really where I was going to be going and what I wanted to do. I had an idea, but I wasn't, you know, married to that idea of going into like hospital work and things like that. So I started kind of looking at different avenues, and I fell into fertility. And I was working in Charleston, South Carolina at the time, and moved to Chicago and was able to start working at a facility here in Chicago with Dr. Brian Kaplan. And he has a very large practice. So I learned a lot of what I was doing just from hands-on, day in, day out. And I learned a lot about myself and my own body as well as I was going through just the 9 to 5, you know, and talking with these women. And I feel like I learned a lot from him professionally, from the lab director standpoint. And then I also learned a lot from my patients, just talking with them and hearing their experiences. And so I really do resonate with your listeners, because that was part of my job as well, is kind of hearing what they had to say. And they helped me make decisions for my future. And, you know, I say that because because when I was working with a demographic of women that we call in medicine third-party reproduction. So third-party reproduction would be women that missed their window of being able to conceive a child genetically of their own, and they're having to utilize a donor egg. And you can imagine that being told that you would not have a genetic child of your own, it's a grieving process. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, telling a woman that, you know, that innate just nature of wanting to be a mom, but that you wouldn't have that biological connection with them. You know, it's a hard thing to understand and to accept. And then to move on to the next step of saying, okay, this is my life. I'm going to be using a donor egg and being okay with that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot you have to kind of come to terms with. And part of my job was just listening to these women as they were trying to understand, you know, and go through this kind of alone sometimes. I think women feel like, especially in that with third-party reproduction, that they felt like maybe they didn't want to tell their friends. Maybe they didn't want to tell their family. I mean, a lot of women don't talk about going through fertility treatment at all because they don't feel like they can be open and honest without maybe feeling judgment from the person listening. When I would talk to them and listen to them, they would say to me over and over again, I wish I had the opportunity to freeze my eggs. There's no amount of money that I wouldn't pay. I just go back and have that choice. And for me, listening to that over and over again, because these women didn't have the choice, you know, egg freezing is still somewhat in its infancy compared to the other parts of reproductive medicine. So these women, a lot of times, didn't have the success rate with the egg freezing to where they would have wanted to invest their money. So it's not like they chose not to, it just wasn't available to them. But we were seeing more and more women at this stage when I was talking with them that were freezing their eggs and were having success with it. So I kind of sat back and just thought to myself, you know, I don't know a lot of things in this world. I don't know a lot of what my future has, you know, in store for me, but there's one thing that I know, and I know I want to be a mom. And that's when I made the decision for myself to freeze my own eggs. From my own experience of being a patient, but also being a fertility nurse for the past 12-ish years, I hope to educate women and listeners to know about their body and know what options they have available to them. And while I feel like egg freezing is amazing and I wish everyone would do it, I do understand that it's not always for everybody. But just to gather the information so that you can make an educated decision for yourself, for your body, and know what options are out there for you is a huge step for us, mm-hmm. even that we have that ability.
That's amazing. And I read, as I was looking at your bio and some information on you, that you made that decision to freeze your eggs in 2013.
A long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're really on the cusp, because I think that it was 2012 that it became non-experimental.
Yes.
And was kind of more open to just women who wanted fertility preservation versus there was a medical, like a cancer diagnosis or something like that. That's amazing. And that you had the awareness because of your career to make that choice for yourself. Because I think many of us, even though we might hear on TV or we, you know, in passing, we are kind of aware that egg freezing is a thing that women do. I shared with you a little bit before this that to me, I just had this idea in my head that it was like this very desperate move that like, surely I'm not going to need to do that. And I've said about myself that, you know, I was worried about my fertility, but it didn't hurt $10,000+ enough. Like I wasn't at that pain point until I was. And then when I was, like you said, like I will pay any amount of money to ensure that I have this option for myself. But that was mid-late 30s. I mean, for me, I was 37, the first round of egg freezing that I did. And gosh, I wish I would have done it earlier, but I didn't know. And so I love for you that you were surrounded by it, where you really couldn't ignore that option for yourself.
Yeah. Every day it was, you know, me leaving work and really kind of diving deep into what I wanted for my future and if I was making the right decisions. And believe me, I really did try to look at all avenues of it, the good, the bad, the ugly. And I really couldn't find a reason not to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's when I decided, you know, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to quit overthinking this. I am just going to do it. Mm-hmm. And you're right. The science itself at that time was very new. And we were just starting to see success with it. And it has grown leaps and bounds since I've done it. It continues to just kind of gain momentum. And the success that we're seeing with it is just monumental. And it's a really huge step for not only the field of reproductive medicine, but just also for women in general.
Do you mind if I ask you, and if this is too personal, you totally don't have to answer, but your relationship status when you froze your eggs, and also kind of roughly what age you were when you made that decision?
Yeah. So my relationship status, I was dating. I was actually in a relationship, but I knew it was not going to be forever. But, you know, it just, I was young. I was 27, living in the city. And, you know, nothing about my relationship at that point was like, seemed permanent. I just was living my life and enjoying being in my 20s. And I didn't want to have to think about my biological clock. No one wants to hear about my biological clock. So like this was able to like kind of put that off to the side so that I could just really enjoy the moment of where I was. It was in a new city for me. And I just wanted to experience life in the moment and not worry about the future. So it was a lot younger than what we typically see. We're trying to reach women younger and younger. Just like you said, you don't really know until you know, and you're in that position and you're experiencing it firsthand. Mm-hmm. But I would say many women that are in their mid, late 30s, early 40s, a lot of times will say, shoot, I wish I would have known about this sooner. Mm-hmm. So part of being an educator and reaching women is trying to get them to do it younger and younger. And we can kind of go into why that's important. I mean, obviously we don't have a pill that you can take to turn back time. I mean, obviously we would all be doing that, but it's if making the decision at 35, like, hey, I'm thinking about freezing my eggs and I'm going to do some research and educate myself. And then if you decide this is right for you, it's not waiting until 37, 38. It's kind of being your own advocate and moving forward at a pace that feels comfortable with you without kind of just letting more time slip by.
Right. Okay. I do want to get into the more education piece, but I want to ask one more personal question. And that is, once you had frozen your eggs, how do you feel like that changed life for you? Did you truly feel a weight off?
That's kind of a twofold question. I did feel like a weight was lifted off my shoulders. In a sense, I didn't think about it after I did it. And that was a relief because I felt like I've done this and I can just live my life in the moment. But then the other side of it was I was able to take my experience then as being a patient and knowing day in and day out what these women are going through that I was working with and be able to kind of to empathize with them to where I wasn't able to before. And that, you know, was something that I tried to use as a tool to help my patients feel like they weren't alone when I was, you know, working with them in the clinic.
I hadn't really thought about that angle, but having gone through three rounds of egg retrieval myself, I can't imagine like if my nurse specialist had said, oh yeah, I had those hot flashes too, or I commiserate with some of the experience. I think that would be really helpful.
Yeah, I tell my patients all the time, like, I'm not just telling you this because I read it in a textbook that this is a side effect of a medication. Like, I've done this. I'm telling you from my personal experience. This is what I felt. This is how I recovered. This is, you know, all of those things. And I do want to say one more thing before we do go into the educational kind of aspect of this all. I want women to know that are listening that it wasn't all rainbows and butterflies for me. I definitely did feel that same feeling that you explained of, is this an act of desperation? Because I was really excited about it at the beginning. And then I would share it with my friends and they would think I was crazy. And they would be like, why are you doing that? You're 27 years old. And kind of making me feel bad about my choice and that I was jumping the gun. You know, it made me sometimes second guess what I was doing. But I think now coming full circle and it being now, gosh, 8 years since I've done it, a lot of those women that were the hardest on me about the decision that I made or questioned me the most have now become patients. And I think about it like that. And I think I am just so glad that I stuck with what I believed in and I didn't allow outside chatter or peer pressure or influence to impact what I in my heart, it was right for me. It wasn't just like, I'm going to do it. And the next day I did it and everything was beautiful. You know, it was a lot of trying to figure out how I was okay in my own mindset to move forward with this and to move forward positively and feel it like a sense of empowerment.
And I hope that some of that stigma has gone away because like you said, it has been 8 years. And I do think we're thinking about it and talking about it a little bit differently. I started my whole fertility journey only 2 years ago, and I felt a little bit of that pushback. And people were very confused because I also was in a relationship, but also not sure that was the relationship. And even if it was, I knew I didn't want to, it wasn't in a place where I was ready to rush and have a child with him soon. Unlike you, I was, you know, a decade older. So I did feel the pressure a little bit more, but certainly I did feel some of that. Like, you're dating someone, like, why are you freezing your eggs? Because I'm dating someone and he could be the one, and maybe we're going to need these eggs, or he could not be the one. And I want to have that freedom to not feel stuck in a just okay relationship because of my age. And I feel like I have to sort of make this work because 40 is looming. And, you know, so it really gave me the freedom to make the right decision about the relationship that I was in and not feel pressured. I mean, because I do think that that's another option that we don't really talk about, is that a lot of women do settle relationship wise. Because
100%. And it's so hard because as women, you know, you think about how our reproductive system is, how we're born, how we're made, how it all works, how age impacts that. And we're in the 21st century. Like, we should be able to live a life that we want to live, that's not being, our biological clock isn't tying us down. I mean, I don't want to say it's not fair, but like, sometimes I'm like, it's not fair.
No,
like,
it's not
this
fair.
This happens. Like, I don't know. Sometimes I just think about this and think about the women that in the past didn't have this option and did have to either sacrifice their family or their dreams and aspirations, mm-hmm. or gotten stuck into a relationship that really wasn't a healthy one. And, you know, we're chipping away at this. As women, we stick with this together and we're chipping away at this and we're getting closer and closer to be able to say, you don't have to make any sacrifices. You mm-hmm. can have it all. You know, with egg freezing, that's just one step towards that, or one step closer.
Yeah. Okay. Last personal question. Do you have children now?
I do. And if you hear him screaming downstairs, I apologize. So I do. I have a little boy. His name is Hayes. He is 21 months old. Aww. And I'm very open about this. Many women ask, did I use my eggs? How was it with getting pregnant naturally? Was it something that came easy? Am I still glad that I have the eggs? Yada, yada. And I'm happy to share kind of how we got where we are today. So my husband and I, we got married in 2017. Shortly thereafter, we were hoping to start a family. And I feel that I needed to do a little better with practicing what I preach, because after 1 or 2 months of it not working, I was like, oh God, what's wrong with me? Like, you know, it just automatically. And I'm thinking, Whitney, if this was a patient that came to you and said, I've been trying for 2 months and I've been unsuccessful, I would tell them, you got to give it time. You know, odds are against women every single month to get pregnant. I mean, there's even the most fertile of women have about a 25% chance of getting pregnant every month. Mm-hmm. So when you think of it, that there's a 75% chance every month that you try that you're not going to get pregnant. It is going to take some time. And based on my age, the recommended time of trying before seeking any sort of, you know, assistance with fertility would have been 1 year. So after 2 months, you can imagine when I was like really upset about it, I was like, had to take a step back and be like, okay, like, listen to what you're saying. So we tried a couple more months. Now it's 6 months and it's still not working. And so at that point, I'm like, all right, we're going to go talk with Dr. Kaplan. Like, maybe you have these eggs. I have them for a reason. Maybe we should tap into them. And a lot of the stuff that he said, I knew in my heart, but I needed to hear it from him. I needed to kind of take my nursing hat off and put the patient one mm-hmm. back on like I did 8 years ago and listen to what he had to say to me. And he made it very clear, you know, it's just keep trying. Don't jump the gun. He asked, you know, do you want to have more children? And I'm like, absolutely. In a perfect world, if I could control all of that, I would. And he said, okay, well, fertility is always kind of going down. So it would make more sense to leave these eggs there and continue to keep trying naturally. And a couple months after that, we were able to conceive naturally. So now he's 21 months. Of course, everybody's asking me, when are you going to have another baby? And I'm still just enjoying him, how he mm-hmm. is right now. And to be honest, I think that I'm allowing myself to do that longer than what may seem the norm, because I have the eggs.
Yes.
And I feel good about that.
Yes. That's amazing. And that's why, you know, when women are on the fence and they're not sure and they're just, you know, they're feeling that pressure, but they're like, but I really, really want to meet someone. And I'm like, great, freeze eggs. So you have them with him. Like, it doesn't necessarily mean, because a lot of my audience, we are women who end up using our eggs on our own with donor sperm. That's kind of mm-hmm. the main demographic that we're talking to right now. But even if you're still so committed to that love, marriage, baby, carriage, like, that's to me just as strong of a reason to have your eggs frozen. And like you said, maybe it's not baby number one. Maybe you're thinking about, you know, long-term and how you want to space your family. I love, love, love. Every time I drive through Austin and I see the facility where my eggs and my embryos are frozen, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so glad that they're there and not in my body. Like, it just is peace of mind that I've got some on reserve. I don't know if I'll ever use them, but it just feels good that they're there.
Yes. You just don't know how you're going to feel in a certain situation. So by freezing your eggs and having that there, it's kind of a constant for you. Your life can kind of go, and it will. It's guaranteed to go every which way. You never know what life is going to throw you. And that's kind of what makes it exciting. But by having your eggs frozen, that's a constant.
Yes.
And it allows kind of those twists and turns to happen to where you don't have to worry about the fertility aspect of things.
I've even heard of women who said, I wasn't sure. I was really on the fence about whether I ever wanted children, and freezing my eggs helped me decide I didn't want kids. It meant that they got to actually make a decision versus having it happen to them. And so they really needed that empowerment of, I could utilize those eggs if I wanted to, and now I'm realizing I don't want to.
Right. And they have the control. It's not, they're not forced into something. We see patients a lot too, that are like, I don't know if I want kids. If you had to ask me right now, I'd probably say no, but who knows, maybe down the road, I decide that I will. And I understand, you know, that my fertility is always declining. I'm, you know, I'm getting older, so I don't want to have to make that decision right now. So I'm going to freeze my eggs.
Well, let's move a little bit into the more education part of things. So, you know, most of my audience are single women, and many of them are listening because they're feeling that pressure of the biological clock. A lot of them are, you know, they're here listening to stories of women who've made a decision about what to do about that. So many of the people who've been on the podcast are single mothers by choice or moving in that direction. But if someone is just still on the fence, where would you start with them? What should they know?
I feel like the first thing to do, I mean, obviously, the number one thing I think people do, aside from if they aren't talking to someone and heard word of mouth about a facility that someone went to, I mean, most people are going to Google, right? And I think that obviously Google's a great thing to get answers and get them quickly, but you sometimes kind of have to be a little, you know, cautious with that, because there's so much that you can't find on Google that's really important when making the decision to freeze your eggs. So when I say that, what I mean specifically, I mean, obviously you want to go to a facility that has a physician that you feel comfortable with and have good bedside manner with. Many women will say, I want to know the statistics of the physician. And I understand that. But when we talk about egg freezing, it's not so much the pregnancy rates for IVF that a woman that's freezing her eggs should be looking at. So embryos and eggs are very different, and the lab that does the freezing plays a very important role in the success rates. You know, you need to find that doctor that you feel good with. You need to know the laboratory and the embryologist and their experience with egg freezing, because like we mentioned, egg freezing hasn't been around for 50, 60 years to where all embryologists or all physicians have experience with the technology. Mm-hmm. It's something that is still somewhat in its infancy, and we are gaining momentum, but it takes practice. And so you want to be sure that you're going to a facility that has that practice, but also has the results. So it's difficult too for women that are taking control and they're type A and they're figuring all of this out and they're trying to gather all the information, and they say, show me the studies, show me the proof. And we say, well, there's really not national published studies, you know, whereas with IVF, you do have that, because many women are coming to freeze their eggs, but not all of them have come back to use that.
Right,
so we're gathering the data. So it's hard to, you know, reassure a patient that it's working without seeing that on paper. So, you know, in our facility and with our laboratory, we have babies that have been born from eggs frozen in our laboratory. And that's a lot to say, because a lot of women, you know, are going to a facility to where they may not have those numbers yet. It's not to say that they won't have them, but just not yet. So you want to look at the lab, you want to look at the doctor, and you want to be able to have a good rapport with your nursing staff as well. The nurses, and I don't know if you experience this, but typically is the person that's going to be your biggest advocate through this process, really kind of walking you through, being your voice to the doctor, telling you what to do in the evenings with your injections and when you need to come back, talking you through that. So if you don't have a good rapport with him or her, you know, that's going to make for a tough, you know, treatment process. So those are things that you can do and kind of research on your own. But I really do feel like for your listeners, and I really would encourage them to schedule a consult with someone to gather that information. I mean, that's the best place to start. So at OVA, we do offer complimentary consultations. So patients that are unsure if egg freezing is right for them, but want to just know a little bit more, we can schedule you a call or Zoom, especially if your viewers are out of Chicago. We'll do a Zoom and we'll just talk through it. A nurse will go through everything from beginning to end so you can start gathering that data and then know what next steps would be if it's something that you want to continue to move forward with.
That's amazing that you guys offer that consultation, because I have worked with coaching clients and some of the women that I've spoken with who a consultation alone will cost, you know, $400 or $500.
Yeah.
The purpose of the consultation should be, is this a right fit for me? Gathering information, but they feel like they have to have made that decision going in, because otherwise they're forfeiting, you know, pretty big chunk of money. And the other piece for women in this demographic is if they're planning to move forward with embryos versus eggs, we're also paying for sperm. There's so much expense involved in this path. And so it's amazing that your clinic offers that consultation.
You know, education is a big part of this process, especially at OVA. And so, you know, the patient education and helping them make the right decision for them and for their future. And it's all not all going to look the same. It's not all going to fit perfectly into this square box. It's treating the patient and not just their ovaries.
Yes. I have a question about the freezing success rate. And I don't know if this is something that you know, or
I don't know if I'll be able to answer it, but we can see.
Well, so I do understand that one of the things that has changed over time and improved over time is the technology that we have for flash freezing of the eggs and therefore how successful they are with thawing. And we've talked about on the podcast before that the reason why embryos are so much more successful is because they're like a multi-celled organism. And so they just, you know, if portions of the embryo are damaged in the freeze-thaw cycle, they can potentially regenerate, whereas an egg is a single cell. So sometimes we lose them in the thaw rate. But something that I wonder about is I've heard that that thaw rate of like, I froze 12 eggs and how many should I expect to actually like make it through the thaw? That has to do with the embryologist, but also the actual equipment. Do you know much about that? Or
so let me kind of back up a little bit and I will give you as much information as I know. And
yes, hopefully please that correct will me help if I'm answer. Wrong. This is not my field.
No, absolutely. So you are right that in theory, embryos are more stable than eggs. It's, they have all of the chromosomes that they need. Think of it as like walking on two legs. It's balanced. Whereas an egg is only half of what you need to make a baby. So it's kind of teetering on one leg. With vitrification, which is that flash freezing method. So in the beginning, it was much easier to do it with embryos because they're more stable. And we were noticing that it was much more difficult to keep eggs stable in that same sort of environment. So we typically were doing slow freezing method. With vitrification, though, what we realized was that it was putting the egg in a glass-like structure so that it was stable. So in some facilities, their success rates may be still better with embryos because they're more accustomed to working with them and they have more experience with vitrification of embryos versus eggs. In our facility, the success rates are essentially maybe 1% to 2% different. So for me, when I'm talking to women and they're like, okay, so embryos and eggs, is there a difference? Is there better success with an embryo? Yeah, I'm sure in some facilities there are. And when we all were starting out with this, absolutely. But because the advancement in the technology with the vitrification and more people that are doing that, egg vitrification is coming to be pretty darn successful in comparison to embryo freezing. And for someone to tell me that there may be like a 1, 2, or 3% difference, I would take that so that I could have time to think about who I wanted the sperm donor to be, whether it's anonymous or known or whatever.
Right.
So that's number one. When we talk about attrition rate, so attrition rate is the drop off. So when we talk about freezing an egg or freezing eggs, we have a goal number that's typically in mind based on a woman's age and her ovarian reserve testing. So let's just say that our goal for a certain woman is to freeze 20 eggs. It's important to know that 20 eggs does not equal 20 babies. I think that's also a misconception that people are like, I'm freezing my future child. Not really. I mean, a portion, but like there's a lot that needs to happen.
Right.
So when a woman comes back to use her eggs, we have to thaw them, like you mentioned. And sometimes there is a drop-off rate there. In our facility, we freeze only mature eggs. So we freeze the best of the best of what you produced. So when you freeze just the mature, good-looking eggs, the attrition rate is going to be lower than if you froze everything.
Right.
Because immature eggs, a lot of times, are not going to survive the thaw. So it is normal to maybe lose, you know, an egg here or there. But in our facility, our thaw rate is about 99%. From there, you have to fertilize, obviously, with sperm. If it's not already fertilized, if we hadn't frozen an embryo, and we don't always know the quality of the sperm at this point when you're freezing the eggs, then they have to grow into embryos. And then those embryos, you have the choice of if you want to do genetic testing on those. So you do have an attrition rate at all of these steps. So thawing, fertilizing, growing to an embryo, you're going to lose some here, there at each step. So it's important to kind of know that you want to freeze enough to give you the best success rates. So the doctor, once they get your results from your ovarian reserve testing and kind of go through everything, is going to tell you what they recommend as far as freezing the eggs. So I don't know if I'm answering your question as much about the attrition rate and with the vitrification, the difference between eggs and embryos and the thaw rate and the attrition with that versus mature eggs and immature eggs. Did I answer that or not?
You did. And I'm so happy to hear that the success rate for eggs has improved since my conception of that there was a huge difference between eggs and embryos. Because I think we're often told that. I think the other piece of that is that when we just freeze eggs for preservation, we don't get information about the quality. I mean, we know that it's a mature egg, but we don't know if it's genetically
normal
and
that is the truth.
And that type of thing.
To do any sort of genetic testing, you need it to be an embryo. And really the gold standard of even knowing the quality of the egg is to fertilize and see how well that egg grows into an embryo. So sperm is very important when making an embryo, obviously, but the egg is the most important factor.
And for women in my demographic, like we are kind of at an advantage in some ways because the sperm that we're using, oftentimes we're picking, it's not our partner, you know, we're choosing from a sperm bank based on the health, you know, we get to really get that quality sperm.
Yes.
And also as single women, if we're not sure about our family planning future, we're not ready to choose that sperm at the time when we freeze the egg. So we can't make embryos if we're not ready yet. So many of us have done the split where we fertilize some and freeze some just as eggs. And that was kind of how I got to a place of freedom of realizing now I get to get pregnant because I want to be pregnant and not because my clock has run out. But it really took, I needed the frozen egg so that I feel like there is potential there to continue dating if that's what I want to do, to wait for that partner if that's what I want to do. And also I needed the embryos to know my egg quality.
If you want to know the quality of your eggs right now, you know, the best way to do that, the gold standard of care to do that would be to fertilize. But the quality of the egg isn't going to change between if you just freeze the egg or if you fertilize and freeze an embryo. It will stay the same.
Right.
It's just, when do you want to have that information? Yeah.
Right.
Do you want it now, or are you okay with waiting?
Right. And for me, it was like, okay, so I'm not getting very many eggs, so I'm going to do multiple retrievals until I fertilized a small number of eggs and was like, oh, actually the quality is good enough where I don't feel like I need tons and tons of eggs to feel relatively certain that what I have frozen will result in.
It isn't just all what you see on the surface, right? Mm-hmm. So when we talk about ovarian reserve, there's two subsets that kind of go underneath that. And that's the quality and the quantity of the eggs that you have remaining. And they're both very important, but they're both evaluated very differently. And you have to look at them as a cohesive measure. You can't just say, I've got 36 eggs. Like you said, you felt like you didn't really have that quantity because, you know, it was less than what you had expected, but your quality was great. Mm-hmm. So I would much rather have, it's a hard pill to swallow at the early stages, but when you look back on it, obviously it would make the most sense if people wanted the smaller amount good quality eggs than the other, but it's just, it's a hard thing to not have those facts.
And
right
if you're
in front
not
you.
Ready to fertilize, then you maybe do need to go for more quantity because you're going to wait longer. But the problem is then you could wait 5 years and find out that it doesn't matter how many you had, the quality is not great. Or maybe you didn't need to go through multiple retrieval cycles because the quality is great. And now you've like overdone it.
Right. So it is tough. Yeah. It is. You're going to sacrifice something somewhere. So you have to really, really think it through and ask your medical team, the physician, the embryologist, the, you know, nursing staff, really what your goal is in all of this and finding the right thing, the right plan for you.
Well, thank you so much for answering all these questions. And is there anything else before we go that you want to make sure that women know or hear? Could be on the educational front or just even from your experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think from the educational front, whenever I talk about egg freezing, I think it's important to understand as women, we are born with all of the eggs that we will have for our lifetime. We're all in that together. No one's fertility is plateauing or increasing. It's always going down. It's just how fast it goes down that changes from woman to woman. So to really get answers about what's going on with your fertility, the first step after you find a facility that you feel comfortable with and that you do want to move forward with is doing ovarian reserve testing. And I don't know how many of your listeners have made it to that sort of step in the process of kind of talking about their fertility potential, but that's really going to give the patient and also the medical experts, you know, a very good look into what's going on and how that woman may need to be treated. Or like you said, if you need multiple cycles to really get to that goal number of eggs to freeze, to make your success rates as good as they can be. Mm-hmm. So that's step number one. And it should be a comprehensive sort of testing to look at your hormones and to do an ultrasound and then talking those through with the nurse and the doctor. So step one is looking at that ovarian reserve testing. And then the next would be to talk with the laboratory. Does the laboratory that you're going to have success with egg freezing? Do they have babies born from egg freezing? Really knowing that component and the difference between eggs versus embryos, like we touched upon, and really knowing the experience of the team that you're working with and doing it as young as possible. I think that's just really key, is to be sure that you're freezing your eggs, you know, when you make that decision, not postponing even any sort of fertility treatment, not just egg freezing, embryo mm-hmm. freezing, IVF. It's deciding if this is something that you want to do, just remember that time really is of the essence. And mm-hmm. you're able to take control with this technology of your future. Sometimes I'm still just in awe every day that we have that ability and that we can do that. And I hope and I encourage your listeners to really take that time to really look into this for themselves, to gather the information. Maybe they decide after they gather it that it's not the path that they want to go, but there is a lot of information out there for women to help them come to the decision, especially if they're on the fence about what may or may not be right for them.
Yeah. And I love what you said about doing this as early as possible, as young as possible. And also I've talked with women who are like, oh, I'm 36, 37. I'm too old to freeze my eggs. And, you know, as someone who is currently pregnant, will be almost 40 when my baby comes. I was 38 when I froze this egg that created this baby. I'm like, it's not too late. Like, don't rule yourself out. You know, even if you're past 40,
at least get
the information and find out. And, you know,
patients always say
a number.
It is. And patients say all the time, well, how do I know if I'm a candidate? And it's just to do the testing. It's a simple mm-hmm. sort of, you know, in our facility, you can come in and do it in 15, 20 minutes. For patients that come to us from out of town, we can assist them with scheduling it wherever they are. And you get that information. And really, that's when you're going to have a lot more insight about what treatment's going to look like for you. It's never too late to look into it. Don't cut yourself short.
Try to go early, but if you didn't go early, it's never too late.
Exactly. It's always best to do the youngest age possible, but I don't want people listening to say, man, I'm 37, 38. This isn't even worth it, because science isn't all or nothing. And you really don't know until, like you said at the beginning, you don't know until you know. And so I think that doing that testing and figuring out what's going on is going to provide a eye-opening sort of experience and security for the women once they get those results.
Absolutely. Well, before we go, would you like to share the contact information for OVA?
Yeah, we offer complimentary consults. So please feel free to reach out to us. You can call our office, which is 312-800-0228. You can visit our website, which is www.ovaeggfreezing.com. You can email me personally at Whitney, which is WHITNEY @ovaeggfreezing.com. I'm always happy to answer any questions. If I don't know the answer, I will find someone that does. And we're also on Instagram at @ovaeggfreezing. So many ways to find us. So I'm happy to talk with anybody if they have questions about this, just getting the ball rolling.
Perfect. Okay. I will link all of that in the show notes so it's easy to find. And I just thank you so much for being so generous with your time and sharing all
Absolutely.
This information.
Absolutely. It's really been my pleasure.
Yeah. So glad to have you here. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
I've always wanted to be a mother. From the time I was a young girl, motherhood and being a mom was forefront in my mind. Okay, this time I get to be the mom. You're the sister, you're the dad. That would be 5-year-old me bossing my brother and cousin around while we were playing house in our basement playroom. During university, while I was majoring in English literature, motherhood and the theme of the mother was central to many of my papers. And in fact, I worked on a thesis about how motherhood was portrayed in literature. Fast forward a few years, and now I am working as a pediatric speech language pathologist. I am passionate about working with children, particularly those between ages 3 and 6, and in my day-to-day life of helping children and their families, I get a small taste of something I crave more of. Every day I see the bonds that children share with their parents. And I realize not every day as a parent is enjoyable or even easy, but when kids are upset, when they are dysregulated or cranky, their parents are their go-to people. They are their trusted safety nets. What I know for sure is that I yearn to be that mom whose screaming, crying child nestles their entire body into my arms for safety. I want to be my future child's go-to person, the person who they have an irreplaceable, deep bond with. So I'm turning 35 next month. I remember very distinctly that when I turned 32, I found myself single after another failed relationship, no eligible partners in sight. And I came to the realization that more than wanting a partner or husband, I wanted a baby. I remember realizing if I died tomorrow, I wouldn't mourn being single, but I would mourn being motherless. So for the past 3 years now, I have been devoting all areas of my life really to being ready to pursue being a single mother. I have moved cities and jobs a few times over the past several years, although I recently, just this past summer, decided to move back to my hometown. This wasn't a small or an easy decision, but really ultimately I knew that I needed to be closer to family. It's really, really important, and I think crucial really to the well-being of myself and my future child, that I have a strong support system close by. And so I moved cities. I've been working through lots of stuff with my therapist and readying myself as much as possible for this journey. And I recently also took a huge leap of faith and I started a private practice in hopes of creating essentially more opportunity in future for more balanced and more, maybe more flexible work and home life balance, with being a mom, keeping that in mind. So essentially every decision I've made over the past 3 years, big and small, has been informed and shaped by this dream of being a single mother by choice. Now that I've been thinking and dreaming and planning for about 3 years, it's interesting how the idea of solo parenting has actually become increasingly more appealing to me. In my work life, I often come across families who are struggling through divorce or children who are caught in the middle of all kinds of difficult life changes. And I don't say this to devalue families who take a more traditional route at all. I think partnerships and families of all shapes and sizes can make for wonderful environments for children. But as a woman who has my sights set on raising a child without a partner and with the support of extended family and community, I feel actually a sense of excitement at the prospect of having full responsibility and freedom in all kinds of decisions, even though that does, it comes with a lot of responsibility. It comes with freedom. And you know, whether it's naming my child or what school they should attend or what values I want to teach and model, or decisions relating to their physical well-being, their diet, you know, all kinds of decisions that come with parenting, I'm actually kind of excited about the prospect of being that sole decision maker. And I guess I am a self-professed control freak, so to speak. So, you know, maybe that part of my personality makes that a little bit easier. And to be perfectly honest, my excitement about pursuing this journey does not come without lots of uncertainty as well, some days more than others. It comes with anxiety sometimes, on days when I'm feeling particularly tired or down about, you know, any aspect of my life. Questions do crop up for me. I mean, questions like, am I healthy enough? Am I strong enough? Am I resilient enough to manage the sleep deprivation in those early days of motherhood, to manage the real struggles that inevitably come with parenthood, whether it be difficult health diagnoses, accidents, you know, there's all kinds of things that you can't predict that may come. And so, yes, worries and doubts really do crop up. I am determined, though, not to let them interfere with my ultimate goal moving forward with this decision, because I do feel it is the right decision for me. As far as who knows about my decision, I by nature am a very quiet person. I'm an introvert, and I have not told very many people. I've stayed very quiet about it. Admittedly, some of my silence has been due to my fear of backlash, even backlash in the sense of some people are well-meaning in their questions and comments, but I still fear that I will get those questions and comments. So I do live in a very small, rather conservative Canadian city. And I wish I could say that I don't care what people think. But if I'm really being honest with myself, I do. And I worry that simply taking my child to the doctor, registering them in school, could usher in all sorts of comments and questions, whether they're well-intentioned or not. So yes, I do have that fear in the back of my mind. What will people think? What kinds of questions will I come up against? I hope as a society we can get closer to the point where being a single mom by choice just is more normalized, is more accepted, more acceptable. And I do hope to get to the point in myself that I have the confidence, you know, regardless of society, that I have the confidence to not always be anonymous. For now, I want to stay anonymous, and I hope that someday in the not so distant future, I will have that confidence to share my decision with the world. I have to say, I am so inspired by all the strong, independent single women I've gotten to know through the single mother by choice community, whether it be through Facebook, Instagram, all the online platforms. Witnessing their journeys have reminded me time and time again that this alternative path toward motherhood really is possible. And it's such an honor to have a piece of my story shared on your podcast, Katie. So thank you so much.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Single Greatest Choice podcast. I'm your host, Katie B. You can learn more about me, this podcast, and the Single Greatest Choice coaching at my website, www.singlegreatestchoice.com, or find me on Instagram at single_greatest_choice. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a minute to rate and review in iTunes. That helps more women to find our show. Until next time, I'm sending you all of my love and support as you go about making the choices that will create a life you love.